Where are we, Lionel?
We're in a very wet, cold Plateau de Bay, sheltering under the press tent near the finish line. I'm completely, woefully underdressed. Shorts, T-shirt, no rain jacket. My feet are now wet because you made me, Richard Leakley.
Another pair of trainers sacrificed. Yeah. We're huddling together with Philip Martins here of Team Katusha, press officer. Philip, you're a man. Rodriguez off the front, is he going to win?
We hope so. It looks good for the moment, but still 6K to go. Many things can change very fast and soon. I don't say nothing now.
I think you're being unreasonably realistic there. I think he's got this one in the bag.
He's got what?
I think he's got it in the bag.
I hope so, but yeah.
Well, we'll wait and see.
Again in 3 kilometres.
We'll wait and see. So, Lionel, on the lower slopes. Richie Port is there leading up the Sky train, which has lost Nicholas Roach. Nibali's just had a go. Contador's just had a go. He's come back, but now Vincenzo Nibali is attacked. Reports today that Alexander Vinokourov has told him he can find a new team for next year, so this will be an effective two fingers at Vinokourov if he stays away. But they're riding very steadily. The race isn't really on, is it, Lionel, down there?
Not really, no. It's threatening to get started, isn't it? But the weather in the last hour has been so bad. They must be just relieved to be on the climb and warming up a little bit, I think.
I've been sitting in the Le Mans motorhome, Greg Le Mans and Kathy Le Mans are here, and they've got a motorhome where the temperature was a lot more pleasant than this. But Le Mans has been watching the lower slopes of the Plateau de Bay, and he thinks... Well, watching the way the race was unfolding, thought it was all over, thought that Froome's rivals had given up, Chris Froome that is, who's in the yellow jersey, but maybe he spoke a little bit too soon. Well, we've just seen an acceleration from Valverde, who's countering Vincenzo Nibali. Richie Port, Geraint Thomas have gone after Valverde. Froome seemed to let a gap open up there. Is that him just riding the way he often rides his climbs steadily rather than following sudden bursts?
Well, yeah, and the other thing is, if he lets a gap open, he's got Nairo Quintana on his wheel, so if Froome lets the gap open and then accelerates to close it, we know that Quintana prefers to ride a more steady rhythm, so maybe he's just trying to sort of stretch the elastic a little bit.
Rodriguez grimacing through the rain, but I think he's going to win the stage. Nibali's been clawed back very, very gradually. They haven't panicked, they've just let him hang himself, really. Quintana, though, is sitting there. I think he thought about having a little go there when the gap opened. We can see Valverde attacking again there. He didn't really get a clean attack the last time. He's having another go. Richie Port's riding steadily. Geraint Thomas behind him. Chris Froome behind him. The problem is Chris Froome always looks knackered, doesn't he? So you can't really tell if he is or not.
Well, he does a bit, yeah. We've mentioned it a lot, the ungainly style. But, I mean, Sky's approach to these mountains is never varies, does it? Richie Port is just riding at a tempo, and he will ride at that tempo for as long as he can and then leave it to Geraint Thomas. And then, but the way they're going, Froome's still going to have company with, you know, 3-4 kilometers to go, and then it's basically up to him, and whether he just rolls in with everybody else or marks any moves, or whether he tries to take even more time today. You wouldn't put it past him.
Lionel, we've just watched Chris Froome attack, get a little gap. Geraint Thomas has been doing sterling work on the front. He's been a little bit distanced now. We saw Nairo Quintana go with Froome. It came back together. Contador followed, Van Garderen followed. Then Valverde counter-attacked, and Quintana's gone again.
Yeah, I mean, when Froome and then Quintana and Contador went, that really stretched that group out, and you could see who the strong ones were and who the weak ones were. Mollema's at the back. Pino was desperately trying to scrabble back onto the wheels, and you can see that it splits roughly half and half. There are probably 5 strong ones and 5 weaker ones.
We're in our tenth position, just behind the finish line. If we turn around, Lionel, we'll probably see Joaquim Rodriguez in a moment or two. There he is. He's just ridden into a scrum of photographers just past the finish line. So attention. Back down the road. Lots of congratulations here. Actually, that's the Movistar team congratulating each other. I'm not sure why. Maybe just making it to the finish.
Yeah. maybe just happy for a fellow Spaniard.
Just happy to be close to Spain.
They've all got jackets and...
Maybe just happy to be properly dressed. Here comes Jakob Fuglsang, holding on for second. Roman Bardet just behind them, should hold on for third.
Juan Antonio Fletcher behind us there, had a large umbrella. I wish I had a large umbrella, Richard.
I wish you had a large umbrella, Lionel. You might not be moaning so much.
This is the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. Today, we're in Plateau de Bay.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore, and I'm with Lionel Burney.
Evening, Richard.
And we're back, Lionel, in the warmth relative of the press centre.
Where's the third corner of our triangle?
The third corner of our triangle has abandoned us for today. Daniel Freep is away somewhere a couple hundred kilometres east of here. He's had a date today with a certain ex-7-time winner of the Tour de France, whose name I shall not mention for fear of people turning off already. But we will be hearing a little bit from said ex-7-time winner of the Tour de France a bit later in the podcast, because Daniel has sent us some audio from that occasion. But we have a Tour de France to talk about. We gave you a bit of commentary on the stage as it unfolded. We are going to be joined a little bit later by Francois Thomazeau, our French friend, who is a doyen of the press room. He has worked for many years for Reuters. He actually now works for the official organisation of the Tour de France, and he writes a daily column, and he takes part in the daily French podcast, which he's doing as we speak. But he'll join us a bit later on. There's been a bit of coverage in the French papers today that won't have been welcome reading for Team Sky and Chris Froome, casting a little bit of doubt on him, and we want to ask him about that in particular. But let's not talk about all that for the moment, because we've got lots else to talk about. But let's just rattle through what exactly did happen today, Lionel.
Yeah, well, it was the Plateau de Bay stage, the much anticipated and final Pyrenean stage of the Tour, stage 12. Spanish rider Joaquim Rodriguez won his second stage of the Tour. He won on the Mer de Huy, now won on the Plateau de Bay. And it was one of those days where a big break went and they fought it out amongst themselves, and there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing for a long while. Michal Kwiatkowski, the world champion, and Sepp van Marck were out in front. They reached the bottom of the final climb, the Plateau de Bay, and their time out in front was numbered, really, as soon as they started climbing. Van Marck, in particular, looking very tired on those lower slopes.
Looking very big as well.
Looking very big for mountain climbing. I think 81 kilos, he may be a real lowlands classic specialist, not his terrain at all. Fantastic ride by him, though. Kwiatkowski did give him the flick of the elbow to suggest that he comes through and do a turn on the front as they hit the bottom of the Plateau de Bay, which I thought was a little bit cheeky.
Optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, Kwiatkowski is probably only about 65 kilos, and he was, he would have benefited. I think into the headwind, he obviously would have benefited, but Van Marck didn't have the legs to go through. They were caught, and then Rodriguez attacked, and he was holding off Jakob Fuglsang of the Astana team, although really it was a little bit like the pursuit yesterday. The gap was never really going to come down between Micah and Dan Martin on the road to Cauterets, and it was never really going to come down here either. Honourable mention to Roman Bardet, who has gone from a real horror of a day on the bike in the heat, when he was suffering from heat stroke, to a very creditable third place performance. Should also perhaps mention the GC race, number of attacks, little digs at Chris Froome's group by Nairo Quintana, Alejandro Valverde, briefly by Alberto Contador and even Vincenzo Nibali, but Richie Porte and then Geraint Thomas just stuck to their rhythm and rode all of those attacks down. And lastly, the Tour is over for Alex Dowsett. He struggled, suffered, and just about made the time cut yesterday, but today he was out of the race fairly early. It's been a tough few days for him.
A disappointing debut Tour for him. He, you know, it's hard enough riding the Tour without crashing heavily early on, today, as Lionel said, finished the Path of Debate, and Daniel's mentioned a few times just how hard a climb that is. It is a hard climb, and it's made harder by the rain today, and the rain and the cold, even hailstones at one point. I asked before the tour, I remember when we did our tour preview, whether it was too hard, whether it somehow had this nullifying effect on the racing, and I asked that because there have been some epic performances here, but 2011 was a very similar kind of race. Andy Schleck, who was the big favourite, kept sort of launching these half-hearted attacks, a bit like the attacks that I thought we saw today, looking around for his... That's when he was dubbed in the French press as one of these people who suffered from a neck condition that meant his head was always tilting back, because he seemed to attack and then look for his brother Frank, and didn't get anywhere, made a little gap near the top, but it wasn't decisive at all. And today, very similar. Nobody made a decisive move. There were a few efforts, but... You know, I was speaking to some of our French colleagues there, and they were talking up the prospects of Nairo Quintana, who is a bit of a diesel, who does seem to get better as the race goes on. The two Grand Tours he's really shone in, the Tour de France in 2013 and the Giro d'Italia, which he won in 2014. Certainly the Giro, he won that in the third week, and he seemed to get better and better as the race went on. That was a Giro also run off in terrible weather at times, and he came through that unscathed. The riders were coming in literally in dribs and drabs. They were quite bedraggled at the finish. So, you know, when you see them up close like that, having made an effort like that, the goosebumps appear very quickly on the flesh. And, you know, they need to be looked after.
On your flesh or on, no, the,
on,
rider's their,
on the rider's flesh? On the rider's flesh. They need to be, you know, dried and put in warm clothes as quickly as possible. But before they were whisked away, I did manage to stick my recorder in front of Rafał Majka and Michael Rogers, the Tinkoff Saxo Bank riders. Good to mention Majka, because somebody did point out on Facebook, I think, that we didn't give much mention of Majka in last night's podcast. It was a live podcast on Wednesday night, so we had a lot to think about. And we didn't really spend a lot of time talking about him as the winner of the previous day's stage. So to try and redress the balance there, let's hear a little bit from Rafał Majka and then Michael Rogers.
This is the tactic for the last climb, but I'm a little bit suffering for yesterday, the long recovery, but still I try to pull really hard, take good rhythm in the climb, and suffering under riders. Alberto is today is feel really well, really good, and try attack, and it's really hard because we don't go like you know, like the rhythm, like it's really fast. I think so. I push then, like, you know, also Michael Rogers and Roman Kreuziger is put also good tempo, and we go fast into this climb. Alberto, I feel much better, and we try to finish good in Tour de France.
Yeah, that's a good race in itself, isn't it? I think Andre got some points back today, but he's still in the lead. The coming stages, they're more transition stages. They're not... Not particularly high mountains, but there are some tough climbs there, and I'm sure it's good for Peter.
During the Tour de France, listen twice a day to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar. There is all the latest interviews and analysis from every stage in the evening show. And in the morning, Monday to Friday, Kilometer Zero will take you inside the Tour in the company of the podcast team, Richard Moore, Daniel Fripp, and Lionel Burney.
Few conclusions perhaps to draw, Lionel, from the Plateau de Baie stage, the toughest climb perhaps of the race, the toughest stage of the race. One person who really did stand out and has had several more nominations for Pedlar de Charme, which he was the winner of yesterday, I can't remember which day, anyway, Geraint Thomas is due a Pedlar de Charme t-shirt.
We didn't name a winner yesterday, did
That's
we?
That's right, we've got to do that, we'll get on to that soon. But Geraint Thomas rode very well up Plateau de Baie. Was dropped at moments when there were attacks. You know, he didn't go with those accelerations, but he rode. I bet if you look at his power file, he rode a very consistent sort of tempo all the way up, and it came back because it was a sort of fast, slow type of pace up there. He still sits fifth overall, and Chris Froome was asked in the press conference afterwards whether he thought Geraint Thomas could finish on the podium, and he said he didn't say yes, but he said nothing is impossible. I mean, he wasn't going to say no, was he? And he was unlikely to say yes, so he said the only answer he really could say. That has been interpreted by some as Froome tips Thomas for podium, but it wasn't quite as strong as that. But nevertheless, Thomas is riding extremely well, and I think that has been a surprise for many people. We'll hear an interview from Brian Smith soon about Geraint Thomas, but you know, there are questions being asked about Geraint Thomas's sudden emergence as a great stage race rider, although he did finish second in the Tour of Switzerland recently. Is it a surprise, Lionel? He's 29, he's always been a good rider. He rode the Tour at 21, the youngest rider in the race in 2007. And what was most impressive, I think, that year was that he finished the race very fresh. He, you know, we spoke to him a lot at that Tour, and for a 21-year-old, he coped incredibly well with the rigours of riding it.
Yeah, I mean, if you talk to people who've known Geraint Thomas since the days when he was a young rider, you know, there's never been any doubt about his talent. You know, he has the engine for the pursuit. Where this kind of scepticism comes in is this belief, and I'm not sure where it's come from, that somehow riding on the track and riding in mountains are completely different events, and that they are completely incompatible. And we know that isn't the case. We know that you can't be in peak form for a 4K pursuit at the same time that you're in peak form to ride a 15-kilometer mountain. But you know, an athlete can change their training, change their preparation to suit different objectives. And there is no doubt at all that Geraint Thomas has been moving gradually towards this over the last few years. I mean, 2011 was it when Bradley Wiggins crashed out, and Sky were having a bit of a shocker at the time, and he went on the attack in the Pyrenees, and I think
over the Tourmalet,
and he got the Jacques Godet prize, I think it was, for being the first to the top of the Tourmalet. Phenomenal ride that day. I mean, he climbed that very well, so he can clearly climb. What he's not done is been in a position where he's ridden the tempo that he's ridden and then stuck around in the final kilometres to preserve a high overall finish. So that is something new that we haven't seen in the Tour. But we have seen Geraint Thomas do long pulls on mountains, maybe not the last mountain. But, I mean, you know, sport is all about progression, isn't it? It's about doing something and then doing it better the next year and then setting your goal a bit further away and a bit your targets a bit higher and moving towards them. And we saw that he's, you know, last year in Paris-Nice he rode very well, very recently in the Tour of Switzerland second overall, and but for a bit of a shaky time trial at the end would have won that race. So I'm not necessarily surprised,
and let's be honest, Tour of Switzerland, Critérium du Dauphiné are the two main Tour de France warm-up races. If you win that, unless your name is Simon Spilak and you don't evidently like the Grand Tours, but if you win one of those races, you generally go into the Tour as a contender, not necessarily a favourite, but as a contender, certainly a contender for top 10. He's fifth at the moment. You know, let's see if he holds on to that. You know, the putting it together day after day after day for 3 weeks is difficult. But one thing I will say is that he's clearly emerged as Chris Froome's last man for Team Sky, which is probably a little bit of a surprise. I think a lot of people would have fancied that to be Richie Porte, who did the job in 2013. But the order seems to be that Porte is the third last man, then second last man. Geraint Thomas is the last man. And you know, that could actually also be compatible with any overall ambitions he has, because as we've seen today, the best way for him to ride up the mountain is at his own pace. Now, if he's riding at the front for Chris Froome, setting his own pace, he's probably helping himself, strangely.
Yeah, and Dave Brailsford made this point to me before the start of the Tour, that they would use Richie Porte earlier in a role that we've not really seen him do before. When you look at a climb like today, and we'll see this again in the Alps, because of the deficit that the likes of Quintana, Contador and perhaps even Nibali are going to have to try and make up, they're going to need to attack a lot further out. So they're going to be attacking in that sort of 7 to 5.5 kilometres to go window on the final climb. And if that's the part of the climb where Richie Porte is on the front doing the work, he has got that little bit more of a jump to close down gaps that perhaps Geraint Thomas doesn't have. So maybe they've thought about it and said, well, Richie Porte can accelerate a bit better and can jump across gaps a little bit more quickly than Geraint Thomas can, whereas Geraint Thomas is much more the kind of the steady eddy who will be setting a high, fast pace towards the top. And really, when you get down to the last 3 kilometres on these mountains, it's down to Chris Froome by that stage anyway.
We've said, it's been pointed out to us again by the pronunciation police, it's Geraint, pronouncing every letter, not Geraint. So the Welsh speakers have been in touch. Geraint Thomas, ironically, isn't a Welsh speaker. Dave Brailsford is a Welsh speaker, and sometimes he speaks Welsh to him just to prove that he's more Welsh than Geraint Thomas. Very proud Welsh for this. Anyway, I'm rambling a bit. Let's hear a little interview that that Daniel, our erstwhile colleague, I think he's joining us again, did with Brian Smith, who's general manager at MTN Quebec. Brian was talking about Geraint Thomas and about a very novel idea he had last year.
So Brian Smith, general manager of MTN Quebec. We were just having a chat there about Geraint Thomas, his excellent performance on the first mountain stage to Pierre Saint-Martin. A lot of talk about whether Geraint should in future be a Sky team leader, whether he should have a crack at the Grand Tours. But I've just learned that you would have liked to make him the Grand Tour leader of your team, if only for a year last year, and you discussed it with Dave Brailsford.
Yeah, of course, he's a quality bike rider, and I recognise that. And last year when we were building a team for the Tour de France, I thought Geraint would have been a fantastic asset. So I approached Dave Brailsford and I said to him, I know it doesn't happen in cycling, but in football it happens all the time. Would you loan him to us for a year? And that way we could go into the Tour de France with a GC contender and try and see how far he can get. I knew what he could do last year or even the year before, and now yesterday he showed what he can do. You know, he's right up there in top 10. He was right up there in yesterday's stage. What a magnificent talent he is. But at the end of the day, he's the heart of the British side of Team Sky, and it would be very difficult for him to go away to another team for a year. They need that Britishness in Team Sky. So it was a good idea, and I think Dave thought it was a good idea to give him an opportunity, because as you see, Chris Froome, on the form he's got at the moment, no one else would be given a chance in the Tour de France, and that's what it's all about. Tour de France is the biggest sporting event in the world, and you would like to go in there as a leader to try and win it. And while you're on the team, Team Sky with Chris Froome, you'll never be given that opportunity. Not unless, and you know, hope that doesn't happen, that Froome crashes out, but you never get given that opportunity. And I think, you know, when I was thinking about it last year, Geraint, he might never get an opportunity to be leader at Tour de France. And I wanted him to experience that. I wanted him to come, okay, with a second division team to ride the Tour de France as a protected leader and see how far he could get. And I think it was a good idea. Obviously, it never happened. But, you know, you have to think outside the box a little bit. And, you know, some other teams might think about doing kind of loaning riders. And, you know, we talked a bit about Peter Kenyuk. A year with another team, to get some other racing, to be a protected rider, to see what they can do and then come back to a Team Sky or another top team, might not be a bad thing. And it's something maybe the UCI should maybe consider and look at, because when you're in a long-term contract, you're there, and it happens in football all the time. If you want to see how good someone is, then loan them to another team and see how good it is. And it gives them, you know, it refreshes them, it gives them another experience, and, you know,
Maybe takes some of the burden off their budget as well, because presumably you would have footed the bill for some of Geraint's salary, if not all of it.
Yeah, of course we were. We had the budget then to look at a top rider. We took on obviously Edvald Boasenhagen, and you know, we had the money at that time to look at, you know, covering his old salary. So it would have taken some budget away, but also at the same time it would have given Team Sky an opportunity to have another rider, see what they can do in the Tour de France at the same time.
And now, Le Pédaleur de Charme, supported by British Eurosport.
So it's time for British Eurosport presented Pédaleur de Charme. We forgot about it last night during our live broadcast, didn't we, Lionel?
Well, we did, because we didn't go in with a written down running order. That was probably a mistake, and it just slipped our minds in the hectic, you know, maelstrom of live broadcasting.
We're a day behind. So we are going to award Pédaleur de Charme T-shirt to Warren Barguil from Giant Alpecin team, who had quite an eventful day in the Pyrenees on day two. Just avoided some cows at one point. We're joined, actually, we've just been joined by Francois Thomazeau. I'm going to go on to today in a moment, don't worry, Lionel, but I've been joined by Francois Thomazeau because I've got a very specific question for him. Good evening, Francois.
Good evening.
Now, Francois, Warren Barguil, his surname, can you pronounce it for me properly, please?
Warren Barguil.
Yeah, you do pronounce the L at the end. There's a little L.
Yes, we do. Yeah, Barguil.
It's quite hard to say, isn't it? Barguil.
No, it's simple. Barguil.
When I present him with the T-shirt, I'll probably just call him Warren.
Yeah, or Wawa.
really?
Yeah, is that his surname? His nickname. Wow.
He's a Breton, isn't he, Warren Barguil?
Breton, absolutely. Like Hino, like Louison Bobet.
Like is he like Hino, though?
In terms of character, he's very strong-tempered and probably one of the serious hopes for the future, of the French in the Tour. He's got, that bad temper that, the champions should have. Yeah.
He's also he's a good-looking fellow, like Hino was. I don't want to sort of. I don't want to be over the top, but he is. He's a striking-looking fellow.
No, he's charming. He's smiling. He's always smiling when he wins. a little bit less so when he doesn't win. So, he's one of these rare French guys who doesn't like to lose. Because French guys always find an excuse.
They like to lose.
Yeah, they like to lose in many ways. You have the impression they would like to be Poulidors more than Anquetil, and they always have good reasons to lose. Like, I struggled so much today. I was sick. I had this. I had that. And it's always the tragic or melodramatic, but Warren Barguil, nothing of the sort. He's when he loses, he's just dejected.
He's also quite unusual in being a Frenchman on a foreign team. It is quite unusual. He's a strange rider for that team because it's a team built around sprinters and big classics riders and so on. But is that a good team for him? And does he fit in that team?
It's funny because for a very long time we asked ourselves what does he do with this team with Marcel Kittel, with John Degenkolb, but he showed in the first week that he learned a lot. He learned probably the real trade of cycling on the flat and but never lost his climbing abilities. In the same time, by being in the international team, he speaks a little bit of English. He speaks a little bit of Dutch, and he's open to other cultures. And I think in the build-up of the champion, he can one day be. It might be very, very important because too many French guys like Romain Bardet or Thibaut Pinot, they stick to a strictly French environment. And I'm not sure it's good in the world of cycling as it is now, which is much more globalized, much more modernized. And so, yeah, I think he does everything right so far, even with cows,
Well, our other Pedlar de Charme today, who is for today's stage. And there were a lot of nominations on Twitter for Sepp van Marck, the big cobbled classic specialist, big Belgian rider who survived out there in front until the slopes of Plateau de Baie. Quite odd to see the climbers, the general classification guys riding past him on the slopes of Plateau de Baie. So we'll look out Sepp van Marck and present him with his T-shirt tomorrow, Lionel. That's our job. Since we've got you here, Francois, wanted to ask you a little bit about the we've just watched Chris Froome in his press conference, and he was asked about some comments that have been made by former rider Cédric Vasseur and Laurent Jalabert about his performance on Pierre Saint-Martin the other day, the up to the first sort of mountain where he rode off and left everybody behind him. Similar questions to those asked in 2013 after the Mont Ventoux stage in particular, this guy seems so much better than everybody else. Is it possible? Is it believable? And there have been a lot of comments in France in particular. What's your feeling on the reaction in France? And, we're talking on a day when Lance Armstrong has reappeared. For people in France, are there echoes of Armstrong and US Postal?
Sure, there are echoes, but far less violent. I think the French are a little bit blasé about it all. And I wrote a column yesterday to defend Chris Froome. I said, reasons to believe in Chris Froome, because I think so far, there's something I hate as a journalist, is insinuations, allegations, and no proof, no element of evidence. So far, that there is nothing to prove that Sky are, using drugs. There is nothing to back up any idea that they might have a little motor on their bikes. And you hear guys, journalists should know better than spread rumors, and they do. But when you get guys in the pub, drinking their glass of rosé, thinking, this is outrageous, well, why not, but not professional journalists, for God's sake.
You're not talking about British pubs there, but you don't get guys in British pubs don't drink their glasses of rosé.
No, they don't, and they probably don't talk about the Tour that much, But anyway, there's some, more and more, of course, especially with Chris Froome. The thing I find that... personally, I think that what I know about this guy is nothing. I can't say they're doing things, or I can't say they're not doing things. I don't know. I just don't know. So when you don't know, you'd better shut up. One thing I know for sure is that Cédric Vasseur and Laurent Jalabert, because you mentioned them, what I know for sure is that cycling in their time was not clean. So, you know, to come from a period when cycling was unclean and start accusing guys in a period that supposedly is much cleaner is a little bit, how could I say?
Before I bring you in, Lionel, I just want to mention that, you know, Libération had the front page today with you know, threw him on the front page with a big interview inside with Pierre Ballester, who's a very esteemed journalist who worked with David Walsh on Elle Confidential, the book that exposed a lot of Lance Armstrong's cheating, and, you know, built his reputation as an investigative journalist who found things out. I know he's now turned a lot of his attention to rugby. He's given a very sort of damning interview sharing his concerns, his beliefs, his thoughts about Team Sky and Chris Froome. Now, he may well be right, but I think what he's guilty of there is rumours and insinuations, and I know for a fact he doesn't know, because he's nowhere near the race. He hasn't been at the race for years. And I think a journalist like that, whose reputation is built on solid investigative work, destroys his reputation, undermines his reputation by indulging in that sort of rumour and innuendo. Everything that he worked for is sort of undermined by these very, I think, lazy, knee-jerk comments.
Yeah, I was going to ask Francois what you made of Chris Froome's comments in the press conference a couple of days ago when he said, what more can a clean rider do? He pointed out that he'd spoken to the CERC, the Independent Reform Commission. He pointed out that he had been an advocate for nighttime testing. He pointed out that he had contacted the authorities when he was in Tenerife and felt he wasn't being tested enough. I mean, these are all very proactive things, and I certainly, when I was reflecting on that the next day, I can't remember a rider talking in such specific terms about what they've done in order to kind of, you know, further the anti-doping effort. What did you think?
I thought it was doing, I mean, Sky, since they started, I think they did, well, almost everything right. The proof is that they won the Tour twice and might win it a third time. And in terms of their opening to, you know, open expression of their, of you know, they talk openly about doping, which is very new as well, because, as you know, the law of silence was the omerta, as they say in Italian, for the mafia, was the rule in the peloton, and Brailsford came, you know, with a new approach to that. So I found it a little bit disappointing this year. You might have felt it too, that when you go to the Sky bus these days, this, you know, open attitude has maybe gone down a little bit. You can tell they're a little bit tenser, or maybe they really get sick of being, you know, questioned and criticized all the time. I don't know that you can feel a little bit of nervousness and bitterness a little bit more than they used to be. But apart from that, I think the way Froome acted against doping, I wouldn't be bold enough as to say Chris doesn't take anything, or there is no drugs at Sky. I don't know. Maybe one day, I don't want to look the fool, you know, in a couple of years, guys say, you see, you defended Chris. I never defended Chris Froome or Team Sky. I only defend, a kind of work ethics, and which is simply that you can't accuse anybody without proof, and that so far the attitude of Team Sky towards doping, the way they opened their buses yesterday to the press to show, look, you know, you were inquiring about our buses, here are our buses. The way they took David Walsh on board in 2013, you know, to mean that, I mean, you know, what more? Of course, what more can they do? If they're cheats and liars, bloody hell, it's the worst enterprise of cheating ever in the world of sports, and it will put into question all the gold medals won at the Olympics and the world championship by Brailsford and British Cycling for so long. I can't believe that.
I definitely agree with that last part, because if there is something underneath all of this that is being so, you know, well hidden and continually denied, then it's even more cynical than Lance Armstrong and US Postal. That's what it would be. It would be you know, another level beyond, simply because of everything that has gone before. And so that's kind of where we're at.
Where we're going to get flack for talking about this again, aren't we? When we talk about this, we get some people saying, I got accused the other day of being too flippant. Some people say that we talk about it too much. Some people say we talk about it too little, that we don't ask the proper questions, etc. You cannot win with this subject at all, but I'm afraid it's probably going to reappear.
Well, and the other thing is, it's the result of a legacy that is decades long. It's not going to get solved. The atmosphere isn't going to clear up in 1 or 2 years. So, you know, we've got to get through this kind of period, really. And I think that's where the Tour de France finds itself.
That's where we are. We are where we are. We're on top of Plata de Bay. And we all have to get off the mountain reasonably quickly. So, Francois, we better let you get on while Lionel and I finish our podcast. Thank you very much for joining us again.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
As I mentioned earlier, Daniel Freebut was off seeing Lance Armstrong. I can say his name now. You've got to this point in the podcast. He was off seeing Lance Armstrong today with a few other colleagues. I'm not sure how many members of the public were there, but there were certainly a lot of journalists off to see Lance Armstrong ride one of two stages of the Tour de France. Daniel will report back on that and the experience, and I think he may even be doing a kilometre zero on his day with Lance Armstrong. We'll see what his material's like, won't we, Lionel? We're not just accepting any old rubbish. But in the meantime, for all you Lance fans out there, here's a bit of Lance Armstrong talking about the people who came out to see him ride his first stage of the Tour, one day ahead of the Tour, with Geoff Thomas and company on his charity ride. Here is Lance Armstrong.
Anything that has been yelled has been 100% supportive. Not one cheer, not one go home. I expected to have some, and we're not done, so I'm sure there at some point somebody will say something. But my question is, somebody at the radio guy said, you know, the sports minister came out today with Christian Prudhomme and said that you're not welcome here. And I thought about that, and then they asked me again when we stopped for water, and I said, okay, well, why? Why? It's a fair question. And if the answer is because, you know, you doped, well, then that's a serious statement to make. You're not welcome. But if we're going to apply that to everybody, you're not going to have the caravan is going to go.
So there we have it, a voice that we haven't heard for a few years on the Tour. Lionel, you covered your ears for that. Quite right. Anyway.
Wow, hang on a minute. I mean, you know, we're going to talk about this a bit more in Kilometre Zero and when Daniel comes back. But I can see why it's a big story, because he's a compelling and magnetic personality, whatever you think of him. But really, any angst I've got about Lance Armstrong just disappeared with the Oprah confession. You know, Lance Armstrong is still a human being. He's entitled to ride on the public roads of France. It's not against the law, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, he's doing his thing. I don't have to necessarily like it, but I have to go along with it.
And we're not there, Lionel. We're not there, as a lot of journalists have gone. We stayed here with the race. We are on the moral high ground here, also known as Plateau de Bay, the moral high ground. Anyway, we're just about to end today's show. A little reminder that you can become a friend of the podcast for £5. Go to thecyclingpodcast.com. That's $7.80. You can pay if you're overseas, don't worry. $7.80, €7.17. Or 21,235.66 Colombian pesos.
I mean, these are very approximate exchange rates.
I've just checked them. So any Nairo Quintana fans out there, that's how much it costs to become a friend of the podcast, thecyclingpodcast.com. We've got specials there on Team Sky, the 5-year anniversary of Team Sky. Sorry, we've got our exclusive interviews with Dave Brailsford and Chris Froome. We've got a Mark Cavendish interview there. We've got a classic special as well, if that floats your boat. And we've got two classic specials, one on Fabian Cancellara and Tom Bonin, and one on our sort of trips to Piru Bay and the Tour of Flanders this year. So if you become a friend, you can listen to all of those, and there'll be more special podcasts going behind the paywall very, very soon. Just want to do a round of thanks, our weekly thanks. Thank you very much to our very hard-working producers and editors, Jonathan Rowe, Alex Adey, and James Wickham this week. Get our thank yous. Thank you, guys. Thanks also to Nigel Brown of Dirt and Glory Media. And thank you to British Eurosport for sponsoring Pedlar de Charme. Thanks also to Jaguar for keeping the show on the road, literally, and all the team at Brand Rapport. Thank you all. And thank you from us. We'll be joined again by Daniel Freeb tomorrow night, but for the moment, thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
For the best analysis, discussions and interviews from the 2015 Tour de France, listen to the Telegraph Cycling Podcast, supported by Jaguar.